The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, as every week, we work our fingers to the bone to bring you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And I want to thank the 900 folks who showed up to the National Real Estate Summit a couple of weeks ago. It was nice to meet a lot of you listeners that I talk to on the phone fairly regularly, but don't actually hardly ever get to see. Folks from all over the country were there, and especially congratulations if you got your ticket through WMKV and got the super special deal for listeners. We'll revive that sometime in the spring of next year for 2025. We're already deep in the planning stages for the 2025 summit. I can tell you that the dates, so that you put them on your calendar now so you don't plan to be anyplace else, are October 31st through November 2nd. Once again, here in Cincinnati, Ohio. Lots of interesting things happened there at the summit, and Lots of good discussion in the hallways, some of which was around the market slowing down. In theory, when you read the media, you know, you see reports in the media, it's, oh no, prices are still way up and inventory's still way down, although it's not as far down as it was before. But I talked to a lot of people from a lot of different markets at the summit who were saying things like, well, a property that I would have put on the market in the spring for a particular price, and it would have been gone in 2 days at that price, has now been sitting on the market for 3 months. So, yeah, I'd love to hear if that is happening in your market, because that was a theme. I just heard that over and over and over again. Is that happening in your market, that properties are just not selling, even though they're good properties and they would have been priced right at least back in the spring? And while you're at it, you can tell me what your theory is about why that's happening. You can send that to vinaradio@gmail.com. I'm just trying to gather some further data here. vinaradio@gmail.com. The Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati is having its second to last all-day Saturday session this coming Saturday, November the 16th. It's a 10 a.m. because our speaker is in Mountain Time and he did not want to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning to start his talk. It's a 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. How to plan your estate when you're a real estate investor class with attorney Lee Phillips. He did this last year and in the spring, and I listened to it and went, oh my gosh, yes, there's a whole bunch of stuff I have not done that I need to do before it's too late. Because guys, our estates are complicated. They're complicated. We got rentals, we got private lenders, we got that money's due to, we got other people's banks that money is due to. We got our executors, or, you know, maybe we're not even dead. Maybe we're just in a coma. Somebody has got to be paying the insurance. Somebody's got to be paying the taxes and getting all that stuff lined up so that your heirs are left with something other than a mess is a really great idea. You can find out more about that all day class at CincinnatiRIA.com. That's CincinnatiRIA.com. And it is online. So wherever you're listening from, you can attend that. One of the things that we talk about here on Real Life Real Estate from time to time is more of the business aspect of your real estate business. Things like, you know, do I need an LLC? How do I organize my books? Things like that. And one of the most important business aspects of your business is actually your insurance. And I know, you don't want to think about it. You want to call up your insurance agent, tell them the address, sign the stuff they email you, and just not think about it anymore. Because insurance policies are long and they're complicated and they're just, I don't want to read this. I just want somebody else to take care of it. And that's all fine and well up until the time that you have a claim. And you find out that you didn't really understand what insurance you had or what it covered and this is me speaking from experience, ladies and gentlemen. So today we are going to talk about insurance. Oh, I'm going to turn this off. Insurance is boring. Yeah, it's boring until you find yourself with a $10,000 payout on a total loss of a house because you did not have the insurance that you thought you had. Oh, that won't happen to me. My house is insured for $100,000. So was mine. This is important stuff, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to make it non-boring for you because today we have Jules Snedden, who is not just the Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing at the National Real Estate Insurance Group, but also a seasoned real estate investor herself. She has been in all sorts of positions in insurance at the same time at which she has, been investing in real estate like you and I do. And she is the best explainer of insurance that I have ever met in my life. So she is joining us today by phone. Jules, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hi there, Bina. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jules. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so happy that you agreed to come on today because you and I have had some conversations on the side over the last few weeks about some scary things that we've seen people, real estate investors, doing in regards to their insurance. And that story of mine where I thought I had my property insured for $120,000. Why are you writing me a $10,000 check and telling me it's totaled? It turned out that the problem was something called coinsurance.
Yep.
Which I had no idea what that was. I was like, oh, wow, look at this cheap insurance I'm getting. I'm so happy. And then it turned out there's this thing called coinsurance. So since that's something that I think you're seeing pop up a lot, can we talk about coinsurance and what it means?
Absolutely. I'll kind of give like a broad overview. Stop me at any point and ask a question. So the way I explain coinsurance is it's a creative way, you know, for insurance companies to put that risk back on the homeowner. It makes it so that the insurance company, you know, it greatly diminishes the amount of money that you as the insured get to recover following a loss. If you don't have your landlord policy for this example, if you don't have it up to that replacement cost estimate, at the time of the loss. And so it's a way for the insurance company to penalize you for being underinsured at the time of loss.
Okay.
It's unrecoverable, and it's generally, you know, when I'm looking at this insurance policy I got in front of me right now, it has an 80% coinsurance, penalty built into it, and, it's money that you don't get back. In other words, they take the gross amount of the loss payout on your claim, and then whatever you're underinsured by, in your case, you know, it sounded like it was pretty significant. And, you know, and then they remove that, from the gross amount and then depreciation and then the deductible. So it can be kind of scary. And we can kind of use an example if you'd like, if that sounds good to you.
I would like. In fact, there's a whole bunch about what you just said that I want to unpack. But I want to go ahead and take a take a quick break first so that we can really delve into this. And ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions about insurance, which weirdly hot topic right now, everybody's talking about insurance right now. Give us a call here in the studio at 877-772-9658, or you can send it via email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guest today is Jewel Snedden. I don't know why I have such a hard time saying that. I think it's the two S's.
Everybody does.
I think it's the two S's in a row. If your name was Jewel Snedden, I could say that, but it's...
Right? It's the S.
It's the two S's, yeah. And we're talking about what you maybe don't know about your insurance that you probably should know. And the problem is, you know, we all buy insurance and we never expect to have to use it. But I'm telling you, if you own enough doors for enough time, you are going to be calling your insurance agent at some point and saying, I don't know what to do now. Something happened. Tree fell on my house. I've had, actually, in 30 years, I have had three fires in houses that totaled the houses, and all three of them were arson fires. Not set by me. I've probably owned 300 doors over the last 30 years, and in two of the cases, they caught the people, and in the third case, I don't even think they bothered to try to catch the people because it was a vacant house. That was the one where I got the very low settlement on my what I thought was perfectly good insurance. So co-insurance. We were talking about that before, and you said it's basically the insurance company kind of punishing you for not carrying enough insurance. And you said the words replacement cost.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm supposed to carry enough insurance on any given house, no matter what I have paid for it. Because a lot of people, they'll just insure it for what they paid for it. Because that's, you know, if I can insure it for less money, then I pay less every month. How do I know what the replacement cost is?
So part of the issue is that's why co-insurance is such a problem, because that goal is constantly moving. We don't really, you know, what is the true replacement cost of a home now could change within 6 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we have the issue. You know, the replacement cost estimate is supposed to be approximately what it would cost for you to rebuild the home should it be a total loss, okay? Mm-hmm. But as you and I both know, that has changed significantly, and it's changed by inflation, it's changed by skilled labor costs, you know, so there's a lot of different things. It's also, you know, with coinsurance, it's whatever the insurance company decides your replacement cost amount was at the time of the loss.
Mm.
So that's one of those phrases that's part of that, that policy provision, I guess is what we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it's important that you ask your, you know, agent, hey, I want you to run a replacement cost estimate on my property. And, you know, I want you to put in writing that I have enough coverage that if I were to have a loss, that my property would be covered, you know. And that's part of what we do. You know, we don't allow, you know this, we don't allow coinsurance as part of our program. Because that goalpost constantly moving means that this is something that is not good for the investor. It's something where, and as you found out the hard way, it can significantly affect your portfolio. It can affect your equity. It can affect your whole life, honestly. Uh-huh. I mean, if you've saved up all this money for all these years and then that happens.
Uh-huh. So. Yeah. Luckily, on that particular property, I didn't pay a whole bunch for it, and I didn't have any loans on it. Because if I had a loan on it, I don't know what... I mean, I'd still be paying that loan back.
You would.
Because, you know, the $10,000 I got was like almost enough to tear it down.
And I'll tell you, I'm looking at a policy right now that was sent to me where the homeowner... their mortgage on it is only $150,000, so that's all they have for insurance. But the replacement cost estimate on it is $267,000. So they're underinsured by 44%. And if this were to be a loss, I don't even know how they got away with this mortgage company, except for that the mortgage company wasn't paying attention because this home couldn't even be replaced for $150,000, mm-hmm. you know, and it has an 80% coinsurance. So, I mean, if they had a $100,000 loss, you know, right off the top, they're going to remove $44,000 before they remove the depreciation and before they remove the deductible.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and so we see this all the time.
I think the quick lesson for everybody listening is just avoid a policy with coinsurance.
Yes,
ma'am. And the problem is those are the cheap policies. Everybody's mm-hmm. struggling. You know, I know Florida and, you know, the coasts and whatnot have gotten it really bad with insurance mm-hmm. prices, either insurance not being available at all or the mm-hmm. price is becoming super unaffordable over just really the last 4 or 5 years. But at the same time, even here in Ohio, we've seen significant increases in insurance costs over the last few years. I assume part of that is because of Florida, and part of it is because we had 17 tornadoes this year.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. And you know that. But in this case, you know, and in your case, you would have been better off having a policy, you know, even an actual cash value policy that had a higher, you know, amount and didn't have coinsurance on it, or a replacement cost policy that had a higher deductible, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it was $10,000 deductible, you're better off, and that's going to lower that premium amount,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so whereas they're going for these, what they think are cheaper policies that aren't doing underwriting and aren't doing, you know, an inspection, you know, so how they even know what they're insuring, who knows? You know, but you would be better off because, I mean, even if you had a $10,000 deductible, but you were made, you know, whole with a policy like ours where we don't have coinsurance, you would be better off, right? Because mm-hmm. that $300 a year is not, I always say, how expensive is cheap, right?
Yes. And part of the reason that this conversation came up again, it's been a month ago, was because mm-hmm. I heard somebody say on a call that they were getting $300,000, getting a $300,000 house insured for a number that seemed like it was like a third to a half of what they should be paying for it. And like everybody, it wasn't just me that was alarmed. Everybody on this was one of the Cincinnati Area Friday morning haves and wants call. Everybody was like, whoa, 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 something's wrong. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. And then you and I talked and you said, oh, she probably has some pretty hefty coinsurance on that. That's probably why it is the way it is. Cause it sounds like at some point here, it just becomes up to the insurance company to decide what the replacement cost
mm-hmm.
was.
Yes.
And that could be after
replacement
you lost.
Or rebuilding costs are, you know, and what they'll say is that it, for example, on this policy, it says, that it's the amount of insurance to be no less than 80% of the appraised value of the property to assure adequate coverage. And then they say it's your responsibility to report the appraised value. But then the insurance company is the one that determines if at the time of the loss, if what you gave was still the right amount. And appraised value is also a very weird key term to be using, because appraised value meaning appraised market value, appraised tax value, just having having a contractor or an insurance adjuster come out, right? So mm-hmm. that's a very ambiguous term, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Very true. So I think for a lot of folks, if they're gonna roll the dice and pay the lower amount and mm-hmm. know that they potentially are gonna have a loss that is in real dollars is way bigger than what they're going to get from the insurance company, they probably better be putting every dime of what they're quote saving into a reserve account so that they can pay for it when they have a loss on the
as a type of property. Self-insurance. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and that would make sense. But a lot of the time that's not what happens. They instead have not budgeted except for what that cheaper policy is. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then they haven't tucked away, you know, whatever the difference is. I'd rather us go from a $2,500 deductible to a $10,000 and you be able to be made whole and have that money tucked away, you know, that you're saving on that difference. And that's kind of what we talked about, right?
Yep, yep, yep. So everybody go look at your insurance policies and see if you have coinsurance in them and then make the decision. Are you going to take that risk or are you not? You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing, talking today to Jule Snedden from National Real Estate Insurance Group, better known, I think, as NREG. I think everybody's, every time somebody talks about them, they say, oh, that's NREG. It's NREG. I have my insurance with NREG. We're talking just about insurance issues and things that you may not know about your policy until it's too late. You're trying to make a claim. When we come back from this break, we're going to take some questions. You can ask yours at 877-772-9658 or via email at vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. We're talking about insurance. Yay, insurance! With Jules, I get the same thing when we talk about taxes. Jules, don't be offended. Like,
I'm not offended. I think insurance is amazing because of how it protects us. But I know it's boring. When
yeah,
it comes
well,
to reading
I think
those policies.
I think talking about taxes is great because it saves you money. But mm-hmm. you know, these are the technical things. You know, really, you know how real estate investors are. You are one. they're very interested in like the next deal. And
that's right. That's
where am I
right.
going to get the money for the next deal? And then you start talking to them about things like, well, where are my tax savings? Where's my asset protection? Where's my insurance? Which, by the way, asset protection is not your first line of defense. Insurance is your first line of defense.
That's right.
They're like, oh yeah, I know I should probably, but wait, I've got a creative deal that I'm working, you know, I'll do it later. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's like other small business people may be the same way, but I think for a lot of businesses, their insurance is a little more straightforward. I mean, they don't have mm-hmm. bunches of choices about, well, should I get actual cash value? Should I get replacement value? And am I going to risk the co-insurance? They don't have
yep.
to make those kind
Absolutely.
Of decisions. And we do, and we all have entrepreneurial ADD. So, we got a question here from Floyd.
Okay.
He says, why do insurance companies raise your rate when your credit score goes down? We have an excellent payment history with all of our creditors, but we maxed out our credit cards due to a few major projects running longer than expected. Our credit score has dropped to 650. We have 15 doors. Now our renewal policy for home, auto, and investment properties has doubled. The unexpected increase is affecting our cash flow and only making things worse while we race to the finish on these major rehabs.
Well, I would say that sounds like it's an admitted carrier, and an admitted carrier will sometimes allow for your credit scores to affect your premium. In our case, that we don't care about your credit score. That's not something that we even take into consideration, and I would say Floyd should be checking around to see if he can get a better deal somewhere else. A lot of the time, you know, admitted carriers are carriers that are kind of like almost like insured by the state. They will do that as a risk management kind of thing. And that's why they're doing it, is they're seeing that person as a higher risk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So Floyd, think about it for a second. If you were somebody who was in financial trouble, which you're not, but that's, you know, people, the credit score is often considered to be a measure of your financial stability. Would you possibly maybe be tempted to burn your own house down for the insurance money?
Now, Floyd probably wouldn't.
Well,
think about
Floyd's
that.
Not in financial problems.
Yeah.
Floyd just got some real estate deals that haven't closed
yeah.
yet.
That's what they're thinking.
Yeah, I think that's the logic behind it. But I'll tell you something in his email that kind of, I wouldn't say it alarms me, but it may explain a lot of it. It sounds like his home, auto, and investment properties are maybe all on the same
mm-hmm.
policy. And
yeah.
That is generally something that I recommend against, because it is a little rare to find the guy who knows how to insure your house and your car and also really knows how to insure your investment properties.
I agree.
They just kind of add it on. Mm-hmm. And then I've seen
as a second thought.
Exactly. And I've seen issues where people have done that because it can be a little cheaper to bundle it, although I find it cheaper to do it the other way. And then a loss comes and the insurance agent doesn't even know how to help you through the loss because they're not used to dealing with investment properties. So as Jules said, Floyd, you might want to separate those out and go find a company that like really specializes in investor insurance and get a, and there's a number of them around, but get some quotes from them and see if it's not, see if it doesn't become, you can't do anything about your home and auto because you've got, you know, you've got that with one of these admitted carriers, but with your investment properties, you might be able to get a cheaper policy by just doing a commercial policy where maybe all 15 are kind of on the same policy. That worked out real well for me when I did it. So, I had another question come in. I've got to click back into my email box. Okay, this one is from John. He says, I had a very confusing conversation with my insurance carrier earlier this year. I have always carried high deductibles on my investment properties between $5,000 and $10,000, and they told me that they will not allow me to carry a deductible higher than $1,000 anymore, and so, of course, all of my rates went up. Any idea why this is happening?
Because they are concerned that you don't have the money for the appetite of risk that you have. So it sounds to me like you have kind of a little bit of a higher appetite for risk, meaning that you wouldn't turn in a claim unless it was $5,000, $10,000, you know, or so. And that's why you have that higher deductible, because you're going to roll the dice and take that chance. But your insurance company is saying, yeah, but we aren't going to take that, you know, chance with you. And or your mortgage company may have made a change, and it may be that the mortgage company, if you have a mortgage, is saying, you know, we're not going to allow that because we don't know that you have that $5,000 or $10,000. That's usually, I've never really heard of a lowered, you know, deductible to $1,000 like that. You know, generally about $2,500 is what most of them are. And then if you really want that higher deductible amount, you would, you know, be looking at more like an excess and surplus lines kind of coverage like what we do. Mm-hmm. So I think that's interesting, but I'm just figuring it has to do with someone somewhere isn't liking the amount of risk, and especially depending on how many properties he has, if he's insured with the same insurance company, you know, or the same mortgage company, for example. Mortgage companies, you know, if you've got three or four or five homes, you know, with them, they might get nervous with that.
But for a lot of us, if once we start to own, like, let's say 10 plus rentals, it does make sense to carry very high deductibles because we do have reserves, right? Like if when I had one property, I had the lowest deductible that I could get because I was like, if this thing burns down, you know, I've only got this one property generating rent that can, that has this reserve account. So, you know, I've got five in the reserve account. I better have a $1,000 or $2,000 deductible, but higher deductibles make sense if you're good at keeping reserves and you have lots of properties, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So that really sounds very strange. It sounds like what they decided is that they wanted to make sure that this person, John, was paying more money per month, because that's the only reason that an insurance company would lower your deductible, you know, that I can think of, is that they're looking to charge you more money. And they decided that they're not okay with that risk at that time. So they want to, but normally as an insurance company, I want the insurer to have a $5,000 or $10,000 deductible, because then that's less risk to me. You know what I mean? As the insurance company, as the carrier. So the only thing that I could think of that it would be is that the insurance company is just trying to get more money out of them.
We don't want those customers anymore who are carrying this big deductibles. We want the ones
that just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, that sounds to me like it would be the mortgage company, because I can't imagine the insurance company saying that. It would be more like the mortgage company.
Yeah,
and, you know, or an additional, and you know, maybe that person has someone else you know, on the policy or something. I don't know. That's very, very strange.
Yeah. And John, if you recently purchased or refinanced some properties,
yes,
especially with DSCR lenders, you might want to, mm-hmm, you might want to read through the mortgage, because what your insurance agent may be telling you is your mortgage now says that you can't have a huge deductible,
right,
like that. And that's another thing that people don't read.
Is, yep,
their mortgage documents.
Correct. It could be that that's what the mortgage company's guidelines or requirements are.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Correct.
Mm-hmm. So check that out, John, and let us know what you find out there. So Ed says, how many different types of insurance carriers are there? And also, what does admitted mean?
Oh, boy. Oh, there is so many different kinds of insurance carriers and insurance companies and different kind, you know, different, surplus lines, surplus and excess lines are usually specifically for commercial, you know, landlord policies, you know, liability, that kind of thing. And they're not admitted, and not admitted just means that we aren't, the state is not insuring us. You know, making sure that we're, you know, and they also don't get to tell us what to charge, which is kind of funny to me, because everyone that I've heard complaining about insurance prices, it's generally all of the admitted carriers that I'm hearing them complain about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the admitted carriers are the ones that the state says, you know, we are, it's almost like the FDIC, you know, the FDIC with a bank is insuring you up to $250,000 of your money. Kind of the same thing, that if they become insolvent, the state says that they're going to take care of you. If that insurance company were to become insolvent,
mm-hmm,
that the state's going to take care of you on for the rest of that loss. And excess and surplus lines companies were not held to that same standard. But the good news is that usually means that then we don't have all of those other mumbo jumbos, and we can, you know, allow our coverages to be lower, where admitted carriers will not be as low as us, because once you hit 5, 6, 7 properties, as you know, Vina, the admitted carriers don't want you as an insured anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They see landlords as a much higher risk portfolio, and so they're not interested in that. And so really what the admitted carriers are doing is, you know, they just have the state saying, hey, we're going to pay for you in case they're insolvent. Well, my thing is, an insurance company, you know, that is, I don't know about you, but like if I'm worried about their plan or one of those with the states, I'm going to be more scared if the state can actually take care of me than I would be about my insurance company, you know?
Yeah. So,
Then as far as all different kinds of carriers, and there's a billion different carriers. What was this guy's name? What was
Edward.
This gentleman's name?
Edward. Ed.
Edward. And you know what? You can always email me. You can call Vina, or Vina can email you back my information. And I would love to send you some education on that and to help you to understand what all those different things mean. Cause I could literally go on for an hour just on all those different, lines of insurance.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane, the amount, all the different kinds that there are out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, question from Val. Val would like to know what the difference is between replacement cost insurance and actual cash value insurance, or if you just have a recommendation for which one she could get, she'll take that too.
I love that question. So, actual cash value, replacement cash value, those are the methods that insurance companies use to assign value to the property, okay? Actual cash value is the replacement cost minus the depreciation and the deductible, okay? Replacement cost value is the amount that it would take to replace the property without the deduction for depreciation. Obviously, you still have to pay your deductible. So, but with replacement costs, you can turn in your receipts once you've had the repairs done, and you can recover that depreciation. Where with actual cash value, it's like you get what you get and you don't throw a fit, because you're not going to be able to turn in receipts. You're not going to be able to recover your depreciation.
Okay.
So those are the differences.
We better define depreciation as you mean it in the insurance world versus how everybody's hearing it, which is what I write off every year on my taxes.
You 100%. That's why I love you, Vina. You think of everything. So depreciation with insurance is, let's say I have a home that was just built in 2024. Okay. Well, that home will not have depreciated because it won't have wear and tear. Okay. So, for that reason, I wouldn't get very much depreciation, if anything, on that new home. However, if I have a home that's, let's say, is 10 years old and the roof is 10 years old and, you know, all of the, appliances and everything on the inside are 10 years old, they're going to depreciate. Usually it's like, I think it's like, depending on what it is, you know, roofs are different. Roofs depreciate exponentially, you know, but it could be like 1% per year of, you know, the age of whatever that is. So, you know, like, let's say my kitchen, you know, catches on fire, God forbid, you know, and I bought everything 10 years ago, you know, they might depreciate that by 10 or 20%. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then if I replace everything, I can get that depreciation back. So if I have a $100,000 loss and they say, you know what, this kitchen, we're going to take 20% off of it, for example. I would get, you know, the $80,000 plus they would take off the deductible. But let's say if I go out and I have a replacement cost value and I replace everything and I turn in all my receipts, that depreciation, so they depreciated it by age and by wear and tear, if that makes sense.
Okay, so this is
that's really what it is.
This is something that's always confused me too. So let's mm-hmm. let's just take a single item. For some reason,
yeah. My
furnace burns up and nothing else. Just my furnace. Like there's a fire and it's just the furnace is destroyed.
It didn't hit any walls.
It didn't hit anything else. This is like a miracle fire, okay?
Miracle fire. Okay.
It's a miracle fire. So the furnace, to replace the furnace is $6,000. And
yes, ma'am.
I think what you're saying, the lifespan of a furnace is maybe 20 years. So I think what you're saying is if the furnace is 10 years old and I have actual mm-hmm. cash value insurance, even mm-hmm. though it's going to cost me $6,000 to put the furnace back in, the insurance company is only going to pay for three of that because they're going to say you yep. already got $3,000 worth of use out of it.
That's correct.
We're not replacing a brand new. I mean, you're putting in a brand new furnace, but there's no reason mm-hmm. we should replace a brand new furnace because that's not what burned up.
That's right, and you've enjoyed that 10 years of that furnace, and you didn't want to pay for that replacement cost. You're 100% correct. It would be depreciated by 50% if it was 10 years old on a 20-year furnace, and mm-hmm. you would get $3,000.
But
if you replace that furnace and you have replacement cost value, you would get that $3,000 or whatever the receipts are. I don't want to give any like for sure numbers, obviously, but you get what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, in my magic scenario.
Yes,
where
yes.
we only the furnace burned up and we can get a new furnace installed for $3,000 or for $6,000 with replacement mm-hmm. costs, I would get the whole $6,000 because that would be my receipt. I would say
yes, as long, but you have to also remember you would take off your deductible
right.
as well. So let's say it's $1,000 deductible, you know, you just have to keep that in mind. So you're going to lose your depreciation plus your deductible. So depreciation you can recover, but your deductible you cannot recover.
Got it. Ugh, see, now I understand it.
But that's why it's always like, oh gosh, that's such a gray area, hard question, because you never know. Like, but that furnace is a perfect example. That's a great example,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully that helps folks to understand how it works, because insurance is not going to pay for wear and tear. They're just not. Okay.
Right.
You know, it's just not something that they're going to do unless you have that replacement cost value. And, you know, like I told you, a tree fell on my house and I have $250,000 in damage. And, you know, unfortunately, it means I've had to move out of my home and everything. But all I have replacement cost value. So even though my home is older, you know, all of those things that it's going to take to bring my house up to whole, I'm going to get. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just kind of nice because it takes care of, you know, everything, the wear and tear, the, you know, all of it. And if I say wear and tear and Sean hears me say wear and tear, he's going to have a stroke. So I just want to make sure I'm saying it is the replacement cost value minus depreciation.
That's it. What
actual cash value is.
Got it. So I'm guessing because you would be due more money in a replacement cost policy, that the replacement cost policy is the more expensive one.
That's why. Right. But you know what's so funny, Vina, is really, it's really not always that much more. Like, I ran one today and it was like $20 more a year. So it's just, you know, I just think that it's important that we read our policy, that we talk to our agent. We make sure our agent is more of an advisor than a salesperson, you know, and that they're actually looking out for our best interest, you know, and that they're really reviewing, you know, what you have and making sure that you are made whole to whatever your risk appetite is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what's important, is to take care of you as the client and make sure you understand actual cash value and replacement cost value and basic form and special form and all that. So.
Yeah, for $20 more,
is that crazy?
It makes sense not to have the replacement cost.
Probably usually like $100 or $200, but this one just happened to be, you know, only a little bit more. So it's like, why wouldn't I spend the extra couple of minutes to make sure that I'm running it both ways for my client, you know, and presenting the best of both worlds, you know, because not everybody, and you know this, you have a gentleman that's in your group that he has, you know, actual cash value, you know, $10,000 deductible, and he's happy as heck. He'd self-insure if he could, you know. And he wants the lowest price possible, and he has a higher appetite for risk, and that's fine. He would be made whole still because that's his appetite, right? But you and I, no.
Yeah. Not at the moment. Okay, question from Kevin. He says, if you have rentals and your personal home is paid off as well, so I think what he's saying is the rentals are paid off and the personal home is paid off. Do you recommend an umbrella liability policy? If so, how much and how does it work? So we probably should start with, what's an umbrella policy?
So an umbrella policy is generally a policy that pays over and above what your liability coverage is on your property. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes you'll see $300,000 on your liability. And let's say that you have an umbrella policy that's $2 million and you got sued for $1 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to pay over that $300,000 that you have on your normal liability coverage. Mm-hmm. So an umbrella policy is to kind of cover you for anything over and above. It also could be something like, depending on the situation, if you had it happen on more than one of your properties. So sometimes folks will put an umbrella policy over, you know, three or four of their properties, and that umbrella policy is for anything that would happen on any of those properties. So you can have an umbrella policy on one property, or you could have it on several of your properties. And the idea is, I have a lake in my backyard, for example. I have, I think, $1 million, $2 million aggregate on my home. But because I have a lake in my backyard, you know, we have an umbrella policy that's like $5 million. And that's to make sure should somebody drown in the lake or, you know, somebody get hurt in the lake, I want that extra bit of liability. And that's what an umbrella policy is for. Does that make sense?
Yes. And to be clear, it is an umbrella over the liability part of your policy, not the property damage part.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Now, liability could cover, for example, if the tree that fell on my house wasn't my tree, but it was my neighbor's tree, you know, sometimes that, you know, that's considered to be a liability. It was their, you know, their tree, you know, and it caused damage to a third party, which would be me, you know, that could be covered, but it wouldn't be property of the insured. It would be property of a third party.
Somebody else.
Okay.
Yes.
Or if your kid, you know, drives a car into somebody's house, or, I mean, God forbid, you know, but something like that. That's usually what those kind of policies are for.
Is there a particular amount of, so in other words, you said 1 million, you said 2 million, you said 5 million. Is there a typical like recommended amount, or is it based on how many assets you have, or what's that based on?
What was this gentleman's name again? Kevin?
Kevin.
Okay. So in Kevin's case, if he has his home and then he has several properties that are investment properties. Now, everybody is different. You know, for us, I don't want my personal property attached anywhere near my investment properties. I don't even want anyone to know about that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I would have mine separated in that way. This is just me personally. I can't give him, you know, quote unquote, a recommendation, but I'll just give an example of what I would do. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Apologize.
Yes.
Can you still hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. So I generally would do 1 million, 2 million aggregate on each property. I would have a separate liability coverage on each property. You know, we do that. It's like $7 to $10 plus fees, you know, so $14 a month or whatever per property, okay? And we do it that way as a company and as investors ourselves, because I don't want necessarily all five of my properties to be together. I would rather have that separate coverage, because you never know. If I have 1 million per occurrence, 2 million aggregate, I could run out of insurance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I would do it. I would do it on each property, 1 million, 2 million aggregate, 1 million occurrence, 2 million aggregate per property. And I mean, for, you know, a lot of the time I'll have folks that are like, oh yeah, I have a $3 million umbrella policy on 10 properties and it's $1,500 a year, but we could do 1 million per occurrence, 2 million aggregate on those 10 properties and it's $1,200 for the year. And they're getting $10 million in coverage over all their properties and 20 million aggregate over all of them, you know, specifically 1 million, 2 million on each one. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do.
And Kevin, I will say that most of the asset protection attorneys I know do recommend umbrella liability policies, because again, that's supposed to be your first line of defense, not your LLC. So, Jules, unfortunately, we are out of time. This conversation was way more interesting than I think that anybody who, you know, was listening expected it to be. Really, really appreciate your knowledge and your willingness to share it. And again, Jules is from National Real Estate Insurance Group at nrig.com. And we'll definitely have you back in 2025, because we still have questions sitting in the inbox that we don't have time to.
Thank you so much, Vina. You've been a wonderful partner with us since 2008. And I just want to say thank you so much. It's an honor to get to go on there. And I hope that I've helped your guests, you know, your listeners. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Jules. We will be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.